Welcome to the A-Dub Club, a podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, technology, pop culture, the internet, and general nerdery. There are three things that are important to know. One, we occasionally use swear words, but try to stay in the range of PG-13, or at least the kind of R that cool parents are fine with. Two, we may talk spoilers. In this particular episode, we discuss the concept of arguments, so be warned. And finally, three, most importantly, allegedly, the Guinness Book of World Records was originally created because two friends were having an argument about the speed of birds. With that out of the way, welcome to the clubhouse. We have snacks.
Hello and welcome to the A-Dub Club. I'm Alex Wade.
I'm Andrew Whipple.
And I'm doing good. It's a nice, lovely weather outside. And by lovely weather, I mean reminiscent of Seattle.
Hey, that's nice. That's nice. It's in the 80s today.
It's in the 80s over there? Oh my God.
You're in Chicago. Here in lovely Chicago. It's been nice the last week. It started to get back down to like 70s, etc., which is good. We will eventually hit fall, but I feel like Chicago is one of those, like, it is not a slow decline into fall. It is a like summer, 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 and then the leaves die. And
yeah,
and it
right now cold. it is very much on the cusp. Like, it used to be at nighttime it was like still hot, and then now at nighttime it's like a lot colder, you know, which is great. I love it. We're here on today's A-Dub Club to answer the question, how do we disagree?
How do we disagree? I would say violently and with swords and pitchforks is my pitch.
Absolutely. There's no better disagreement than through physical violence.
I was deeply inspired by Beauty and the Beast as a youth, and that has guided everything that I've done since.
Yeah, so today's episode for me was kind of inspired by just like...
Yeah.
I feel like I have a lot of arguments with people and conversations and debates per se, you know, and dialectics, different words for people talking to each other with various amounts of disagreement.
Honestly, we love a dialectic.
I do love dialectic. That is a word that was introduced to me, I think, 2 or 3 years ago by a new CEO of the company I was at, who was like, we don't have debates, or we shouldn't have debates. We should have dialectics, which meant like, we shouldn't be trying to convince the other of your point of view. You should be trying to collectively find the truth, which I really loved.
I deeply appreciate that as a sentiment. Also, lol, that is the dorkiest shit I've ever heard in my entire life. I love it.
Oh, for sure. He was also a huge dork who like always dressed like a used salesman. Was very interesting.
Interesting.
Used car salesman. Yeah. But it really stuck with me, and it really like, I don't know, this, I feel like that's something that how people converse and how you have conversations with people, effective conversations, is really important. And how you listen and empathize with people when you're trying to discuss something really matters. Yeah. And that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Nice. Nice. Huh. How do you disagree? Well, I think a big initial thought is, with any sort of, particularly like a disagreement or an argument or a dialectic, for instance, having an understanding of what is the goal of what are you actually trying to accomplish, yeah. I think is a important and often underanalyzed aspect of, especially, I mean, because I've spent the last 2 years in my house, I'm probably going to mostly talk about this through the lens of like internet arguments and internet disagreements and stuff like that. But having an understanding of like, what are you actually trying to accomplish by having a disagreement or having a conversation? And is the thing that you're doing actually the thing that will help you accomplish that, is one lens through which to look at it. Whereas I feel like that's very rarely the lens that at least most casual or off the cuff conversations take.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that people... I don't want to say trick themselves out of believing, but like people come into conversations sometimes or debates with what they think they have the intention of like, oh, I'm just trying to find the truth of the matter. I'm just trying to get to a good place or I'm trying to, I don't know, discover truth and, you know, have a good old fashioned debate. And, you know, the conclusion of this, like one of our minds will be changed, versus like people who actually come to these conversations are like, oh, I'm right. And I'm trying to show how I am right to almost any extent, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely like have conversations with my mom that start off like seemingly like she's just trying to get my opinion on things or just trying to understand my point of view, that like quickly devolve into big arguments about like, oh, you just want everyone to have free things and it's not great, you know?
Mm, interesting. That actually is something. So last weekend, as the time that we were recording this, went to my cousin's engagement party, which was lovely. It was also the first large party that I've been in since pre-COVID. And so a little bit of a learning curve in like, how do you interact with people that you don't know at a party scenario? But it was sort of reminding me of a thing that I think has actually started to become more of an intentional thing, especially an intentional thing post-college, of realizing that there are at some points is, like you said, is the goal just to try and get someone's opinion on things, or is the goal maybe not even necessarily to get their opinion on it, but to be like, let's just have a conversation where people can talk and it will pass the time and be lovely. And realizing what are those moments where I disagree with this, but it does not matter in the slightest if I ever convince the other person of that, of my position being correct, which I definitely think is like, that is not the me of middle of high school or really the me of most of college. I think that is more of a recent becoming an adult and becoming an adult in the real world of starting to realize that like, oh yeah, we just like, you have that opinion and it's, we don't need to actually, I guess, how do we disagree with each other? We disagree by just saying we disagree and who gives a shit is one flavor absolutely. Of disagreement. Now I think that is something that is, has different valences depending on what is the thing that you're disagreeing about. So if it's like, oh yeah, I did like the new Kanye album or I didn't like the new Kanye album as an example of one of the things that was a disagreement at the party, who gives a shit? Whatever. That is a good, I think, example of, well, it's a good example of the kind of thing that I would fight to the death 10 years ago, but have now since realized, you know what? Sometimes it's just more fun to have a conversation and let people live in their differences and move on. There are other topics that do feel like there does have to be a little bit more, especially more political topics or more sensitive topics or topics that like have more import on real people's lives, that it does feel like, okay, is there a line between this is the kind of stuff that you can just sort of let go and let God versus do you kind of owe it to the world or owe it to a marginalized group, let's say, to try and change someone's mind,
and it,
even in a social circumstance?
I think it really depends on like who you're talking to as well, of like your relationship with them and how much you want to be invested in their growth and their change, as much as how much you appreciate their knowledge and expertise to affect your own self, you know?
Ooh, so say like, more about that.
Yeah. It was like, I used to be a part of a specific Slack channel through my coding bootcamp program where we had a politics channel, right? And there was one guy in there who there's a lot of people in this channel. One guy in there who I disagreed with, who we would have great discourse and we would disagree with things. And at the end of the conversation, we would still be disagreeing, but we would learn something from each other. And I appreciated this guy. His name is Rich. I love the guy. Disagree on a lot of politics. And I have great conversations with him. There was this other guy who was just kind of an asshole about everything. And like, I disagreed with him, but I didn't appreciate him for the opinions that he had. Like, he spoke a lot about things that he knew nothing about and was just being this kind of debate lord person who's like talking about we had a long conversation about diversity in Hollywood in the Oscars, and like, I'm an actor. I know a bit about this, you know? Not a whole lot, but like a lot more than the average layman. And there was a policy that came out a year ago or so that was about kind of forced inclusion. Maybe that's not the right phrase, but like diversity requirements for certain films in certain ways. And he was arguing against this with a lot of expectations and assumptions about Hollywood in general, with the confidence of someone who knew nothing about it. So it was like, why am I having conversations with this person? Why do I feel the need to convince him when he knows nothing about this? The things he are saying are kind of flippant and arrogant and rude to me and disrespectful. And like, what is the point of that conversation with someone who I don't like as a human being, whose mind I'm not going to change? Why am I trying to, you know?
Interesting, because yeah. The way that you're describing that, particularly, I mean, I'm making wild assumptions about this person as a person, yeah. having never interacted with them, but I think that is a similar flavor to what I was talking about around the like, okay, you're at a party, you just want to have fun, you just want to like, one flavor of the, hey, let's just have a fun conversation is the, great, we're going to agree to disagree, whatever. Yeah. That's definitely a tack that I take, especially I take a lot more
Let
now. There's also then the flavor, which of what you're talking about with Rich, I think was his name, of yep. the, yeah, we're going to have a fun conversation and we're going to actually argue and disagree and we'll probably learn something from each other. Maybe we change our minds, maybe we don't. I kind of get the sense, or transplanting other argumentative guy on other people that I've known through my life and or yeah. maybe me when I was in high school. That
me too.
That
me
there, too, that there is like still that flavor of it's still coming for, or that the goal is still let's just have a conversation and this is the mode of how we're having that conversation. And particularly the thing that like got me triggered on that was the idea of like, oh, he knows nothing about this thing, but is going off very confidently as if he knows a lot of things about that.
Yeah.
Strikes me as the like, oh, this is someone who argues for the sake of arguing because argumentation is a part of just like the conversational toolkit in a way that clearly yes. in this circumstance is misapplied because you're like, fuck that. I don't want to do that. I could see that as a misapplied version of a similar impulse of, yeah. hey, I just want to have a conversation. It's just the way that I know to have a conversation is this thing that is very off-putting if you're not down to play in this same sort of play space.
Yeah, it's something that I've like said to myself a lot. I realize I haven't like said it out loud, so we'll see how it sounds. Of like, yeah. I think debates are bad.
Nice. Like,
you shouldn't be trying to have like the point of a debate. The only good debate is like on the political stage, and even then, argumentatively, probably not a great thing. Like the point of a debate is to convince the audience, not the other person in the debate.
Ooh.
And it's you are convinced in your own ideas and your ideals, and you are trying to compare and contrast them against the other person to show how you are right, which to the audience is what you want to see. Like you want to be seeing these ideas and how they conflict and interact and disagree with each other and compare against each other, versus in a conversation with someone else, like having a debate does not leave room for teaching or learning. It does not leave room for you to empathize with their worldview and understanding how this, whatever you're talking about, fits into their world. It only is about how it fits into your world. Does that make sense?
Wow. Totally. That is galaxy brain snaps. I love it. And yeah, and I think in particular that framing of what is a debate. A debate is, and both in the political debate sense, but also in the like high school debate club and stuff like that. The point of debate is you are both arguing your own point to try and convince the judge yeah. who is the person who did the better job or who yeah. is the person who is the most right. And yeah, interesting.
I think people think about debates not in that way. They think about it as like they think of themselves both as the audience and as the speakers, right?
Or yeah.
competitors, I guess. And like that's not how it works.
And I think that actually maybe to tie together with what I was saying, I think there's the flavor of it that is if you can get two people that are in the same mode. As an example, I would maybe say like my Uncle Bill and my dad can get into this around the dinner table, something like that, of like they are open question as to how deeply held the beliefs that they're having are and how much they know about the things that they're talking about, but like they can fucking go at it at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And from the perspective of, I think like what I was saying with an annoying person in the politics Slack, some of it is fun to argue and taking a little bit of that classical debate me bro approach of, hey, I like to do arguments and I will put on a thing that I might not necessarily know about a ton about to be able to go through the fun exercise of arguing.
Yeah.
And
let
in
me
that
just play
world,
devil's advocate here.
Sure. And in that world, if it's two people that are coming at it from that same perspective, and if you can get two people that are matching on that,
yeah.
I think then that can be fun and reasonable. It's the circumstances like what you're talking about in the Slack group. One person wants to debate, another person doesn't want to debate. That's where you get this like mishmash of like, yeah, it's just not fun.
No, yeah. It's also there's a lot of like shitty debate tactics out there that are like Ben Shapiro-esque sort of things that are, you know, legitimate like styles to win a debate per se. Right.
That does make me think of one thing that I am. So a lot of my thoughts, I think about arguments and debate and stuff like that are muddled. And maybe that's a fun thing about this, this discussion is that it, maybe this helps clarify things. But one thing that I am a little bit muddled on is there, especially around political debates. And part of this is somewhat inspired by a book that I read recently called Better Buses, Better Cities, which is a lovely book. It's pretty short and it's basically an urban policy book around like how, if you're thinking about things from a transit perspective, more effort should be focused on buses as the lens to have better transport, better transit in cities, rather than always focusing on like light rail or whatever Elon Musk is doing or self-driving cars, stuff like that. It's like buses is the, so some of it is like a transit and urban policy argument of why buses are great and we should focus on them. Part of it though is also sort of a like, or the book is sort of framed as the, hey, if you're a transit, if you're a organizer, here's what you need to learn about urban policy and transit with regards to buses. But also, if you're a transit nerd, here's what you need to learn about organizing and public policy in order to actually get any of the stuff that you want to get done. Yeah. And so part of that is that it does have this lens that I am sort of seeing more and more now, especially in the Trump and post-Trump era, around is the goal actually to try and convince people or is the goal to win? And if the goal is to win, then like why the fuck bother getting into a whole bunch of arguments or why the fuck getting into a whole bunch of debates and stuff like that when really what you're trying to do is to like get a thing achieved.
Yeah.
And it's something that I feel very sticky about because I think in either case, an absolutist approach is probably wrong. That like if all you are trying to do is try and persuade people, then like you're going to get bogged down in getting nothing done. But if all you do is just like, doesn't matter what anyone thinks, let's just get stuff accomplished and then they'll be thankful for it later. Like that's also, I feel like a potential recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So in that sort of jumping back several steps around like, what is the purpose of arguing? What's the purpose of discussion and discourse and things like that? I'm very mixed on how much should the purpose ever be to convince people versus if the goal is not to convince people, then why bother getting into the argument and stuff like that? And I don't know. It's a thing that I'm feeling messy about and I don't know where I land.
Yes. And I think it's very dependent on who you're talking to. Like I feel very much like this podcast is us discussing and talking about and convincing, not convincing each other, but like learning and teaching each other and forming opinions around that, you know? And there are people in your life who you trust in, who you want to have these conversations with to make sure that like, oh, you do care about Black people, right? Or you do, surprise, surprise, don't want poor people to die on the side of the street, right? Because if they don't hold those opinions or whatever opinions you have that you identify with, then like you think of them as a bad person, you know? And it's a very real thing of like things you need to talk about to convince other people about. Like when I went back home during the pandemic, like had some conversations with my parents and with my dad specifically about Black Lives Matter and about police brutality. And like, you know, I'm not going to go really deep into it, but my dad comes from a heavy military and slightly cop family. And we got into some very heated arguments about it. And like, they needed to happen, you know? Yeah. And like, that is important as well. Like there are certain people in your life who you can't, who you have to hold accountable to a certain level, you know?
Ooh, okay. That does actually get me thinking about something, both in the sense that you literally said hold accountable, which was a big key point of blah, 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 whatever the name of the episode was. Go check it out. It's on the feed, wherever fine podcasts are found, the cancel culture episode. But also a thing that was that I didn't talk about in that episode, but has been sort of in my brain a little bit. So there's the Overton window concept of the like, okay, what is the stuff that's within the realm of acceptable political opinion and the idea that like, hey, if you get activists being really aggressive about Medicare for all, about universal healthcare, blah, 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 that'll shift things towards the left so that even if we do end up doing a compromise at some point, the compromise is further left than it would have been, 20 years ago, let's say. A related part of that I've heard some people discussing is the idea of like what, not just what are the kinds of things that are seen as acceptable political opinions from the perspective of like what could get accomplished or what is seen as like the normal middle of the road consensus, but also from the lens of like, what are the kinds of arguments that are acceptable political arguments?
Yeah.
Versus what are the kinds that are like, no, 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 that's beyond the pale. You can't do that. I think there is some relevance to the cancel culture conversation around like, what are the kinds of things that you're allowed to argue about versus what's the kind of things you aren't allowed to argue about. But like what you were talking about with the, you know, there's some sorts of arguments that are important to have from the lens of you care about this person and it matters to try and convince them to get towards a particular position. I think the interesting flip side of that is this, like, what are the kinds of things that are viable political arguments versus the kinds of things that are outside the bounds? And also, is that changing as the left and the right get more and more polarized? See, for instance, like 20 years ago, and I think this is probably a bad thing, but 20 years ago, there would be more actual argument. I'm assuming this. I actually don't know because I wasn't paying attention to politics then, but more actual argument around a thing like abortion, around a thing like race, around a thing like...
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, exactly. But there'd be argument around that, whereas now it seems like it's a lot more calcified and a lot more like, you can't really argue about abortion rights from the left perspective because it's like so clearly there is the one acceptable opinion, which is the acceptable opinion that I agree with, and find acceptable. And like, how do you even quote unquote argue with someone who like thinks abortion is fundamentally immoral? Like, I genuinely don't know how you would do that.
Yeah. I can't like for me, I mean, for me, I know I've talked to my dad about this. I don't know if he still holds his opinion, but I know several years ago he was, he was pro-life, at least, but I don't know if that's necessarily just morally or like legally, you know?
Yeah.
Like he can be against it for his own sake, but not believe that the law should be changed, you know?
Yeah. One other related to that particular hot button qualifying statements topic of abortion and abortion arguments. There is another thing that I do see through the lens of like effective arguments, and are arguments even really trying to be arguments, or are they trying to do something else? That I have seen a lot on the internet, on Instagram in particular, but on Twitter as well. The recent example, though, being because, yay, dystopian hellscape. This last week, we're talking a lot about abortion rights, as well we should. Again, dystopian hellscape, blah, blah, blah. Seeing a lot of stuff that gets at, in the philosophy world there and in the logic world and mathematical proofs and blah, 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 which is a dumb way to actually think about how you have real conversations in real life. But there's the idea of like, okay, the first step in any argument that you're making is you lay out your premises. Like, what are the things that you assume to be true that all the rest of your argument is built on? See a lot of posts and a lot of things around abortion rights, but you also see it around gun rights, you see it around vaccinations, you see it around basically any sort of thing that has a left or where there's like polarization, that the arguments sort of, to me, make it clear that, oh, there's a disagreement on the premises. So as an actual example, there was a post that I saw a couple days ago that was saying something along the lines of the, like, you don't have to like abortion. But if you don't like abortion, what you can do is channel that into things like more sex ed access, channel into more birth control access. What you can't do is disrespect someone else for having an abortion or place limits on their abilities to do it. Like, let me see if I can even find it. I think the line was something like, oh, yes, your emotions aren't more important than someone else's bodily autonomy. To be clear, I agree with that. I think that is the way that I see the world.
Yes. But...
However, However, like
that's not the their viewpoint.
Exactly. And in particular, it to me, there's the unsaid premise of, in order to make that argument, you have to believe that abortion is fundamentally just a personal choice on the part of a person who's pregnant. And it's a medical decision on their side, and that it is truly a hey, you're just having an emotional reaction to what is fundamentally my bodily choice. If you don't believe in that premise, then none of the rest of it works and none of the rest of it follows through. And I think it's pretty clear that there are a lot of people who don't agree in that premise if they're coming at anti-abortion from like a moral, religious, like that perspective, as opposed to if they're coming from anti-abortion from the like, we want to control women perspective, which is also,
I think it's the biggest issue people have is, we have a good friend who I've been having more conversations with and arguments about recently about life and stuff. It was very funny because like in high school, I was very much like a conservative Republican. And now I'm very much like a leftist socialist kind of person. And he has stayed in the middle. So like we had arguments in high school in the opposite direction. And now we have him, you know, in this direction as him being a centrist, which is hilarious. But the biggest issue that I find when I have conversations with him is him not, and this is with a lot of people, not just him, of him not buying into my premises, not my premises, into my reality. And not when he says something or contradicts something that I'm saying, I'm like, well, that's, you're trying to fit what I'm saying into your reality and to how you perceive and see the world. You're not trying to look at it in the picture that I see, you know, you're trying to put it into your own picture. And like, of course it's not going to fit in there. Like we have very different worldviews. So why would the things we're talking about, the things that I'm saying, like, of course they're going to sound ridiculous if you try and fit them into your reality, but you can't do that. You need to empathize and to look at how I see things and try and see, you know, what I'm doing. And then there's also the argument of like, oh, Alex, why don't you do that to him? And it's like, first off, I try to. And secondly, these conversations usually start with him asking me my opinions about things and then trying to contradict them. So it's not me trying to understand his worldview, because I think I get it pretty well, but whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think that like tying stuff together, it's that case of having different realities, which leads to different premises, and the different premises lead then to different arguments, assuming that you're both like logically building up arguments based on those premises, which we can get into also in a second. I have thoughts on that. So I think going back to the abortion example, it falls down as an argument and as an argument meant to convince someone who has fundamentally different premises, in part because like there's that fundamental disagreement on what the premises even are. And in that case, an unsaid disagreement on the premises. In the world where you do actually then think through and identify those premises, like if you're in a philosophy class or stuff like that, cool, that's effective because now you know that like, all right, we're going to, you know, we at least know where we need to resolve the differences if we ever can. As a side note, that actually is a tactic that I've started using a lot in professional contexts, especially if I'm ever doing like a presentation where I'm like trying to get someone to agree to do a thing, is that I do make a point of like laying out the premises first and then do the arguments after, because at least that saves time and argument to be able to say like, oh, okay, got it. The reason you disagree is not because you think this feature is a bad idea. It's because you think the problem the feature is trying to solve is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Cool. We can argue about that.
I feel like, first off, quick side note, I feel like that's a huge issue as well, is people start arguing about the thing when they truly actually just disagree with the premise. And it's like, if you disagree with the premise, like say that, don't you, you have to start there. You can't try and disprove this thing that you don't believe in the first place. Like, then you're just using kind of different sorts of debate tactics around that, you know?
Yep. But going back to the example of mutual friend, awesome. I think that's a very good point. That going back to the example of the mutual friend, the challenge of that in a, particularly in a non like academic context, or even in the professional context, it is still like the end goal is I want you to make a specific decision. Therefore, I am laying out my best argument for you to make that decision. Like in those more sort of formal cases, I think being more explicit about your premises and your arguments, and like there is stuff to borrow from philosophy and from like mathematical proofs and blah, blah, blah. In the more like personal conversation thing, like, cool, you and mutual friend, even if you do get to the point where you identify, here is the difference in worldview that leads to the difference in premises.
Yeah.
Okay. What's going to happen from that? Like maybe just an irresolvable conflict. And maybe what that does do is that makes it then more of a healthy conversation, because then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, got it. Now we're doing, now we, maybe we realize this is more of the, I do or don't like the Kanye album, whatever, let's give up, yes, and mutually shake hands kind of thing. Maybe that's what that unlocks. But it's also like the chances of being able to convince someone of a change in worldview are incredibly slim, I think.
Absolutely. I think what that shouldn't be the goal, though. Like, my goal isn't to change his worldview, and it shouldn't be. It should be to try and understand his worldview and to show him my worldview better. That's something that I love about my dad, is I have a lot of conversations, political and otherwise, moral, philosophical, with him about a lot of different things in life. And he's always so fascinated to talk to me and to hear my point of view on things. And we disagree on a lot of things, but we understand each other. And like, we learn something about, like, oh, how this person's worldview, you know, how it is. And then once you get to that point, once you start to understand the other person, from there, you can start to like, okay, you don't start at the crux of it, you know, at the heart of their beliefs, and work there. You start at the very, very edge of things. You start to explain some very tiny, superfluous, maybe not unintentional, but like, you know, it's a slow process to try and change people. And then also in the process, you are going to change yourself. Like, those things cannot come without each other, you know? Like, there's some TikTok I had seen with this. He's like a therapist TikTok guy who he's talked about something around this of like, the way how you can respond to other people arguing with you is like, you can either, you know, deny, and like close off. You can try and attack, or you can try and inoculate yourself, which is where you try and absorb and listen to what they're saying and try and, you know, possibly change. Maybe when you listen and hear it and really feel it, you'll still be the same person, you know? But you have to try to empathize, you know?
That is very interesting. In that, I think this gets less to specifically about disagreement per se, but I think it's related in that idea of, I can only speak for the left because that is the area that I am, I will say, on the fringes of, particularly like leftism as a political movement that is organized into people that talk about it online. But I'm on the fringes of that. I think I'm fairly solidly. Well, I was actually saying there today with my friend that the way to describe me is like, I am perfectly down the middle, a like Vox.com, the John Lovett part of Pod Save America. Like, I am that level of liberal. That's me in a nutshell. Yeah. Anyway. Within the left, I think, that inoculate yourself to ideas that you may find reprehensible or positions that you may not take does not seem like a thing that is necessarily practiced, tolerated, maybe even. I think coming from the perspective of like, this is what happens overall when things get more polarized, is that, like, that is what polarization is that more alignment around specific narrower poles that are a little bit, tend to be more on the extreme. But I think also from the perspective of, in a weird match with the fact that I think there's a big strain of leftism that is around the, like, it doesn't matter to debate. It doesn't matter to persuade. The goal should be just to win, and winning does not involve like trying to convince some working class white person to actually not be racist. Which I think I have some qualms with, but I also get the point.
Sure. Yeah.
In an interesting match with that, there is also this, and maybe it's not the same leftists, but there's this strain of like a lot of reverence for the power and potential danger of language, ideas, concepts, particularly from the idea of like, you shouldn't say XYZ thing, or you shouldn't express XYZ opinion because it might have the actual power of being able to convince someone or pull someone more towards a racist, misogynist, right word, etc. Perspective. And it's an interesting blend of the two of those, that it's like, the inoculate yourself against a bad idea, the reason you wouldn't do that is because you fear the power of the idea, which is somewhat at odds with the don't bother debating. But also, as I'm saying that out loud, the other reason of the don't bother debating someone is the, well, you don't want to give them a platform. And why don't you want to give them a platform? It's because if they have a platform to say their ideas, then that has the power to draw people in.
Fuck. Yeah, that's so hard because I do think there are limits about, like, there's definitely the some notion of having a climate denier on a news program sitting right next to a scientist and, like, giving them that same equivalency, right? But then there's also exactly what you're saying, the opposite of, like, the trepidation around not wanting to explore ideas and, like, how dare you have this opinion? How dare you disagree with this obviously correct thing? You must be a bad faith actor who is evil and not trying to explore, not trying to learn and teach. You must be a bad person if you, like, think that pro-life is a thing, even though you're just some 17-year-old kid on the internet or something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this notion of you have to be right before you can explore.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I do very much understand that opposite notion of, like, yeah, I don't want a climate denier and a climate scientist right next to each other on a news program, for sure.
Right. Like, right.
I don't want Jordan Peterson on Joe Rogan again because, like, stop giving this fucker a platform. I don't want Alex Jones on there. Yeah, he's a piece of shit who is, like, gaslighting manipulator. Like, the idea of, like, the, I don't know, I forget the phrase, but the something of ideas, like the ring of ideas.
Marketplace.
The marketplace of ideas. Yeah, of, like, oh, the best ideas will, like, rise to the top. Like, I fully disagree with that. I don't fully disagree with it, but it's, like, it is a idealistic view of how ideas work. And yes, in theory, good ideas do need to be, can be stronger and better, and that will be what pushes down bad ideas. But also exposing bad ideas, or not exposing, giving them a platform can be bad. It's complicated.
Yeah. I will say, now, for the audience, all three of you, I want to flag this as this is an idea I'm trying on. This is a position that I'm exploring, not necessarily one that I think I'm going to be committed to long term. However, I feel like I am becoming more and more skeptical of the power of ideas being presented as effective in changing people's mind, both from the perspective of some of this is informed by, like, the eye rollingness of what I've recently started to become more exposed to, of, like, the way that book Twitter talks about stuff and how fucking insane all that is. But there is definitely a lot of the moralizing of the, like, oh, it's dangerous to expose this idea in this book because that will get someone to think that it's okay, or blah, blah, blah. And so that's part of why I'm sort of pushing away, is that, like, I feel kind of eye-rolly about a way a lot of stuff is talked about in that sort of literary context, particularly because I've noticed, I didn't notice this, but I read it in an article that noticed this. A lot of that comes from the framing device of kind of the think of the children thing of it's not that if I were to read this book, I would be convinced of whatever its inherent anti-gay message or racist message or blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, it wouldn't, it's not that it would make me get turned towards the dark side, but think of all the other people that it would, all the other less sophisticated readers that might. So that's one thing that's sort of bristling. Part of it is also coming from the lens of, like, I'm kind of wondering, like, is the whole power of Facebook and power of YouTube radicalization and power of misinformation and power of that, like, it's hard for me to put I'm getting a feeling that it feels a little overblown, and I don't have anything to actually rest my hat on for that other than a vibe and a feeling. So I'm putting that out there as to the audience, to Alex Wade, it's a new idea that I'm kind of trying on, but I don't have any actual evidence for it other than vibes. But it's a vibe that's kind of getting me, or it's a way of getting me out of that messiness around the, how bad is it to platform blah, 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 versus how much should you inoculate yourself against bad ideas, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of, I'm kind of finding a way out of that by virtue of just being more skeptical of, is it actually that dangerous to platform people? But I have nothing to base that on other than vibes. So I don't know if I will still continue to believe that even in a week, let alone in 6 months.
Sure. Yeah. I I don't know. And that's a hard question.
Yeah. Question, Alex Wade, on the subject of getting people to change their mind, if you want to discuss it, how did you become a liberal, Alex Wade? You mentioned a journey earlier in this episode. What actually got you there? What was effective? What worked?
That's a good question, because like I think about it, I've thought about it, and like I could not tell you a specific moment that was like
Understandable. Yeah. I would be very surprised if it was a specific moment.
Not even a specific, but like I couldn't even tell you when I was a liberal versus wasn't a liberal. Like, like I know it happened during college sometime, and I'm pretty sure by the end of college I was fairly liberal. I think what happened was like I started listening to more news just in general, and like I was no longer watching Fox News every day at home or listening to Glenn Beck on the way to high school, something I unironically did for many years. I don't know. Like, I think part of it was I went to a college that was very like rich, white kid, old money kind of place. And like seeing that amount of privilege, like our high school, we had a lot of privilege in our high school for sure, but it was kind of sugarcoated with this liberalism kind of thing. And like, high school was great. Yeah, I was about to
say, you can't talk about high school without talking about privilege.
Yeah. Like so much privilege was there.
As my friend reminds me, as I'm explaining more and more of my high school stories to her, there's a little bit of eye rolls every time because fair.
Yeah. There's a lot of privilege, but I feel like there's enough sugarcoating of it that like me going into that experience and never having gone to public school, was like, oh yeah, we're a diverse place that is, you know, so like, half of the people here are on need-based, you know, scholarships, and that's what I thought it was. And then I went to college, which was like, there was no sugarcoating there. There, so many people there are on daddy's money and like got in because their dad donated something to the college. And there's just the aggressive misogyny within like the Greek system. Like I went to Bucknell, and like once you're eligible for Greek life, which is your sophomore year, it's 80% Greek. So it was just a lot. Like seeing it so aggressively, I think, kind of really made me realize like, oh, all these frat bros and future finance bros, and like it just kind of turned me off of the whole like notion of it. Like I didn't used to consider myself conservative. I considered myself a libertarian.
Yeah.
And so I was definitely like, I'm socially liberal and economically fiscal sort of, you know, person.
Yeah, baby. The Seattle special.
Exactly. Who was very much, oh yeah, libertarianism, because that's, oh, hands off. And like the government is just not doing anything. Everyone should have the right to do whatever. And then there was kind of a point in time when I realized that's like, it's kind of, you're either on the right side or the wrong side. That sounds really aggressive. It's like they can't be hands off. Like there's enough corruption and shitty things around the world that exist that you kind of have to do something about it. And that's what kind of changed me from like, oh, we can't just be hands off. We actually need to do something to correct all the injustices in the world and all the things that are shitty. And being in such an aggressively white institution, like showed me how bad it was.
Yeah.
Like
that's interesting.
There were people who, I remember those times of like, oh, there's a guy, some frat bros in the back of a truck going around shouting the N-word at black people around campus. Yeah. Or there's some frats who like, they don't have black people in them because that's not allowed by their national charter. Stuff like that. Yeah. That was like, oh,
I mean,
okay.
I say all that. Like, yeah. Fucking Stanford has got plenty of shit to answer for as well, to be clear. But yeah, that's a little more blatant.
For sure.
Probably not more blatant. I think there have been some like genuinely horrific stuff that has also happened to Stanford as well.
I feel
calling the kettle black, but
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Bucknell, like there's not a thin veil over everything.
Sure. Sure.
One of my great friends is black, and you know him walking around campus, like when he was first there, when he was talking about it, it's like, yeah, people would like stare for a bit kind of thing, you know, like because he sticks out on campus. He's a very black man. That's I think what changed me was being in such an aggressively opposite place.
Yeah. And it seems like, which I think makes sense and comports with my understanding of you as a person over the last decade plus, it sounds like that's more of the principles and the worldview was still the same, but it was an updating of how does that express in terms of what political ideas do I co-sign or fight for and or align myself with?
I don't think that I changed who I was. I think I changed how I saw the world. Or I didn't change the way how I saw the world changed. And like now when I talk to, you know, my family or friends or whatever, I talk about, the world's like a super fucking shitty place. That's like, I don't believe there's been a good president ever. I think Democratic Party is a horrible, awful group of people that are, you know, the best we got right now. And the world's very, very bad is how I view it now. And we need to do something about it.
Ezra Klein, John Lovett, liberal, baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's me. That's me in a nutshell. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. Not my ideals, just how the world I perceived it, you know?
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, that from the perspective of, hey, how do we disagree with each other? From the perspective of taking that one step further of how do we argue with each other and or convince people of things, that does seem like kind of the ideal, even sort of tying back to the stuff that we were talking about before around like, or here's a way of seeing this. I could see a version of Alex Wade that is, it feels like if there is the who are you as a person, then one level down is what are the premises of your argument. Then one level down from that is based on those premises, what is the actual argument that takes you to a conclusion? It feels like that it wasn't the who is the core of Alex Wade as a person that changed. That is the same. Yeah. What are the premises, though, that then that did change, but I can see all of the arguments based on those premises are the same as they would be. It's just that now you've swapped out one set for the other over time, gradually through, a lifetime of experiences. But that like it's that middle layer is the part that swapped, that changed. And then everything else kind of flows from that is sort of the vibe that I'm getting, which I think is kind of if you're going to convince someone of a particularly a held belief, as opposed to that's like, oh, here's a loosely held opinion that I don't really care about and can be very easily swayed on. If you're trying to convince someone of a deeply held belief, that does kind of seem like the ideal way is acknowledge the core of who they are as a person. What is the way to get the core of who they are as a person to tweak them into slightly different understandings of the world and or different premises, and then let the rest of the argument flow from there.
You know, AW Club Bingo, bringing up Ender's Game, very much you have to love your enemy in order to fully understand them. And we don't have to, it doesn't have to be your enemy per se, but like you have to understand the person, empathize with their perspective and not try and push your own stuff on them.
Yeah. The one, now maybe we end up cutting this because that's actually a pretty great way to end the episode, but just in case, the one other thing that I feel messy about, in the same way that I feel messy about the like, should the goal be to persuade or not and blah, 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 there is another thing that I think is a change, particularly a change from the high school version of me to now, is there's this whole subculture on the internet, which I've never been a part of because I'm not part of internet communities. But a different version of me, I could see being very aligned with that is the whole like rationalist subculture, sort of the Slate Star Codex thing and the like a lot of Reddit stuff like that and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Where I think a tenant and a version of theirs that I think agree with, and in particular would have agreed with more 7-8 years ago, is the, hey, human beings are fundamentally irrational in a lot of different ways, and it's valuable to have an understanding of those irrationalities. Now, the rationalist approach is to say it's valuable to have an understanding of those irrationalities so that you can try and overcome them to achieve your like perfect rational enlightenment. In order to like, that's the effective and the correct way to be as a person and the correct way to argue. And like, we need to call out fallacies and call out human irrationality whenever we can.
Sure.
My, I think, change, in particular change over the last couple of years, has been more of the like, yeah, humans are irrational. Okay, fine. Acknowledge and live with that. And like, it's fine to be irrational.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. And so that's definitely something that I do feel a little bit sticky about, even in a lot of the conversation that we've had right now, is around like argument and convincing people of things like that. And in particular, convincing them through a fairly rationalist approach, I think, is sort of the way that we've been framing things. And I don't necessarily know how much like should the goal be to convince people using logic. Is logic even effective? If there's cheat codes that you can use that take, again, to that idea of like, is it important to be effective or is it important to be right?
Yeah.
Like, if there's a cheat code that uses some base fallacy of human emotion, is that fine if it works? Or is that wrong because you're not like arguing the way you should argue? It doesn't matter depending on what is the thing that you're arguing, and do the stakes of a thing matter enough that like, that's the determiner? And I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. First off, of like, there's like public policy and like how you do these things towards masses of people, that you should aim for the effective thing, not the rational thing, for sure, is my opinion of that. If you're trying to get your shit done, especially that, like, that's something right now that I feel like the Democrats and leftists are very too much focused on trying to convince people versus trying to get on that side of the spectrum versus the side of the spectrum of winning, you know. That's part of it. But then there's like next part of it, of rationalists and rational thoughts, I guess, in general on the internet, I feel is like an excuse for people to argue about what they believe in emotionally. And then they come to the rational thing second a lot.
Called the fuck out. Let's go.
Yeah. And it's, I think people use like, I'm just being rational here, as like bullshit excuses for, you know, their own fallacies, that they're coming from an emotional place as it stands right now. There's that part. And then there's the final part of like, of yes, I do think you need both. You do need to use emotions. I think emotions are the place that you should start at.
Ooh.
And then you should go from there, and you should question your emotions. But you shouldn't like, They are a piece of a puzzle that I personally start with, and you should not be beholden to them, but you also shouldn't ignore them completely, is what I got to say about it. But
wow, I like that. I like that.
How you feel about the morality of, like, morality, I feel, is 90% derived from people's emotions, frankly.
Ooh. Yeah, no, we can't get into a whole conversation about my Nietzschean beliefs around morality, but
for sure, yes, yeah.
Suffice to say, I agree, and probably agree too much. If previous conversations are any indication, I like that.
One thing that I think, like, the inception of a lot of arguments that like they turn from conversations into arguments is people kind of, you know, having this thought process, like holding on to their own ideas stronger than they are willing to try and learn or teach, you know, sort of thing.
Ooh.
Right.
Yeah,
and so they go into these conversations that devolve into arguments, you know, I'll say that derisively. And it's, I don't know. People kind of need to take this internal look about like, why is this turning into a conflict versus a conversation that we're just having?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree. And I think it's getting to that sort of fundamental first thing that we were talking about around like, what is the goal of what you're trying to do? In that goal, is it something where conflict is an acceptable path to get to it? Because if the goal is to just have a fun conversation, no, probably. If the goal is to have a fun conversation and you're someone who likes to have conflict as part of that fun, and you're with someone else who does also feel that way, sure, Maybe. If your goal is to actually change someone's mind, is conflict the right way to get, or change your mind, is the conflict the right way to go about it? Probably yes in some cases, probably no in other cases. Is conflict inherently bad? No, but no. But yeah, when is it appropriate? And a lot of that, I think, yeah, depends on who are the people involved, what is the thing you're potentially conflicting over, and is it?
Yeah.
It's relationships, man. It's all about it's all about the messiness of relationships.
A whole topic that we didn't talk about here about like romantic relationships and conflict in those sort of ways that we can get into, but could also be its own fucking episode, frankly.
Probably. Yeah. Do you have thoughts? Initial thoughts?
I mean, it's such a different feeling than we're having right now that it's like, it feels out of place. I'll say them, but it's like, they feel like a completely different episode.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They feel more like, what was that episode we had about like playing games? They feel more appropriate for that episode.
Yeah. I think in the romantic relationship context, then the in the same way as it is true for any other argument or any other disagreement, the stakes of the personal relationship and the importance of the personal relationship on
very high
are very high, in both in the sense that like in some cases if your relationship is like really, really secure, you're able to have very intense arguments because you know that like you have the bedrock of the relationship to be able to do that from. But also in the case of that makes the stakes of what might be otherwise a very petty small argument much higher, because is this a thing that's going to fucking break up a multi-year relationship? Who knows? Maybe.
And then also, I feel like there's also an aversion to a lot of conflicts in relationships because of that, which personally have dealt with, of like my first very serious relationship, the less than 2 years of like in college, we never argued, which was very bad for us. Like, we bottled a whole lot of shit up that we did not talk about. You know, there's a girl who I was seeing recently who like we had some conflicts that were like great. They were like, we disagreed and like we worked through it and we got to the other side of it. And like, that is very important to be able to do that in a relationship.
100%. That is a very interesting point in that I have recently started seeing someone. Alex Wade knows the full details. All of you other listeners do not, unless I've texted you about it already. But
or you're a very specific listener.
Yeah, true. This is a good way. See, now this will be a test. If I get a text at the hour-ish mark after this gets dropped. But so far, we have had disagreements about stuff that are very much the A-Dub Club style disagreements of like, we're having a conversation about a thing and we might have different opinions on it. And we are meta note, in fact, about the A-Dub Club is that like, I think we're very good at having a particular flavor of argument, which is the, hey, at the end of the day, we know that we are having fun having this conversation and to some degree making an entertainment product and are very engaged and interested in learning from the other. But also at the end of the day, nothing we talk about is something that the stakes are super high of like, if we end on a disagreement, that's fine.
Yeah.
Also, we come from a fairly similar background and similar frames, and so we just have a lot of the same opinions on things.
Sure.
Me and the person that I'm seeing right now, we've had a lot of those kinds of disagreements that like feel very at home on an A-Dub Club episode. Insane thing to say out loud, I'm realizing. but we haven't had a fight yet about anything. And there is a part of me that's like, I am curious and interested in and kind of want to have a fight. I'd like not want to in the sense of like looking for it, but like, I think that will be an interesting step in the relationship when it happens naturally. And how do we handle it? And
it's a very important,
but I hope the answer is well.
Yeah. It's a very crucial, important part of relationships and like, don't go to sleep angry sort of thing, you know?
And I guess in that case, it's same framework as everything, but like a more intense version of it of, you know, what is the goal? Like if there's a disagreement, okay, does the disagreement have to be resolved? And what is the goal of that resolution? Is the goal that you have to come to the same opinion? In which case then, okay, how do you go about doing that in a way that hopefully maintains the relationship? Is the goal not to try and get them to come to the same opinion or get you to that same opinion that they have, in which case, all right, what is the way that you go about that, which will depend on the personalities, but what's the way to go about that without...
There's also a whole different thing that I realize we haven't talked about like how you treat other people in conversations and arguments. And like, so there was a podcast episode I listened to between Dax Shepard and Christian Bell, who are married. Or it was, I think it was an interview of Christian Bell, and she was talking about their marriage and their relationship. And like what she would do at the beginning of their relationship is she, if they got into a huge argument, she would storm out of the house, slam the door, get in the car, and then drive away and not answer her phone for an hour. And after that happened, one time, I think, Dax was like, I'm not gonna, that can't happen. Like, if you do that, like I respect myself too much to let you to do that. But she really loved that idea, that very visceral feeling of like leaving the house. It's like, okay, how about this? Next time we get into a knockdown argument and you want to leave, you can go to the door and you can go and sit in the car, but you can't drive off. And then the time after that, you can go to your front, to the front door, you know, and like kind of this compromise of how you deal with conflict and like how you can still respect the other person while still dealing with it. It was a very interesting episode or interview.
Yeah, I mean, I love that from the perspective of being being explicit about, hey, what is the way that we are going to handle conflict, and what is the thing that will, or in this world where presumably the goal of almost any conflict is first, I love you, let's stay together. Second, let's figure out how we resolve this conflict so that we can achieve the first one. In that world, then, being explicit about, these are the steps that we're going to take. This is what is within the boundaries of an acceptable response. This is what is not. And hey, some of the stuff that we are doing is something that is not within a thing that I find acceptable. Let's figure out a way that we can make that work is cool and good. And
healthy conflict resolution.
It does seem to just keep always coming back to what is the goal of what you're trying to do, and how is that goal influenced by and influence your relationship with the person that you are disagreeing with, whether that's a friend, whether that's a stranger, whether that's a political adversary, whether that's a romantic partner. And it seems like, I mean, no, unless you have one that you can pull out of your head, it seems like there is no answer of what is the right way to disagree, in part because it is so variant on all of those different factors. But I think
it's, you know, as my therapist always tells me, what is the effective thing to do in the situation? Like what, because sometimes you get in arguments and you do the thing that feels good, and that's not necessarily helpful for your goal, you know?
Actually, and I think meta take, which is probably not explicit because we're both coming from the same perspective, but the, again, the rationalist argument with the lovely asterisk that you pointed out around how like, are rationalists really being rational, or are they doing post hoc rationalizations of things they already believe? But taking them at their word. And I think that there is a philosophical approach to arguing that might value the thing that matters is the truth. Effectiveness, who gives a shit? What matters is, are you right or are you wrong? And that, like, everything that we have said belies that we don't agree with that as a premise.
Which is something that me personally, like, it has taken me a while in my life to come to that. I would definitely say that I was on that train not too long ago. And like, I'm still personally struggling with getting over that idea that like the truth isn't necessarily the only most important, isn't the pinnacle of importance.
Yeah. I think I was more like that in high school, and then it's been a slow drip away from that. Certainly in part infused by social anxiety, because it turns out it's a lot easier to just agree with people than it is to argue with them you're in an anxious scenario. So that is our big takeaway. How do you disagree? Don't, because it makes you feel weird.
Yeah. Just take a Xanax.
Exactly. Anything else on how do you disagree with each other?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you virulently disagree with everything that we have said in this episode, you can get in touch with us via email at theawclub@gmail.com. That's theawclub@gmail.com. You can also yell at us on Twitter. I mean, after all, what is Twitter for, if not disagreements and yes, particularly ineffective disagreements? Oh, we didn't even talk about how arguing on the internet is bad. Spoiler alert, it's terrible. Don't do it. That's really all that needs to be said. Yeah, it would be 30 minutes of just different examples of why arguing on the internet is shitty. But that's at Twitter at the AW Club. That's at theawclub. You can, of course, find our podcasts wherever fine podcasts are found, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. You can also visit our website. That's theaw.club. It's theadub.club. There you can find our topics guide, which is where we have a list of all the different things that we have talked about. You can click on any one of those things, and it will take you to the episodes where that thing is mentioned, as well as our starter guide, which is a handful of episodes that we think are very good. So if this is the first one that you're listening to, and you want a couple other ones to dive into rather than just going off of the whatever 30 some episodes that we've done. Side note, we've done like 30 some episodes. That's cool.
My God. Wow.
But you can find the ones that we think are some of our good starter ones at that link on that site. And I believe that is everything.
And with that, AW Club out.
AW Club out.
Question, why is it called virulently disagreeing? Like, it's you disagree so much, it's going to infect them or something?
Interesting. Let's do a quick etymology search on virulently.
But specifically virulently in that context,
yeah.
Like, that's a phrase, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I disagree so much.
Okay. You know why? This apparently started in around the 1600s. It is virulently to mean, because virulent and was also, I'll take this again because I'm certainly keeping this in. virulent as virus is, not the original word. Virulent originally meant to refer to poisonous. That was the original Latin thing. And so virulent and virus comes from poison. And so I think it's a parallel evolution where virus comes from poison and also poisonously disagree, starting in around the 1600s, comes from that same base, virulent or virulentus.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay.